Welcome to You're On Fire, a Pokemon Unite podcast hosted by myself, Spraggles, aka Jake, your resident content cowboy here. Yeehaw! And today is a very special episode because I'm joined by a very special guest. Everyone, welcome Ender. Hi, Ender.
Hey, Spraggles. What's up, everyone?
All right. I'm happy to have you here, dude. We're going to get into a lot of exciting stuff here on the podcast. Real quick, shout out to G Fuel. This podcast is sponsored by G Fuel. We call it a spodcast now. That wasn't me just messing up. What am I drinking right now, everyone? I'm drinking Shiny Splash from G Fuel. If you want to support this podcast, exclamation point G Fuel, while I'm live, you can end up going through that link, or you can use my link and promo code in the description of this video. Let's get on with the show. We just had the Eos Cup. It was very exciting and kind of the first massive tournament of the season that was official for all of the Western teams. Obviously, a lot of the Eastern teams have been competing in the, you know, Winter Champion, the what is it, the Japan Winter Champion Series or whatever, and then the ACL as well. So this is the first big one for a lot of the Western teams. Ender, let's just get into it right away here with EU. I'm going to kind of break down the bracket real quick, and then we can bounce around to some of the different teams and some of the stuff we saw. Squishy Squad, which actually sent Nouns Esports down to the loser's bracket, went up against Yala Bingo. Yala Bingo 2-0'd them right there. For Free went up against Illusion, winning 2-1. And then in the winner's finals, Yala Bingo sent For Free down to the loser's bracket. In the loser's bracket, we had Nouns Esports beating Cinco Golemo and then losing to Illusion. We had A3 through L beating Red Ping, beating Squishy Squad, beating Illusion. Then finally, they went up against For Free. For Free beat them, and then it was a rematch. For Free versus Yala Bingo in the grand finals. They had a full bracket reset, and For Free swept both sets of games right here. Did you get to watch a lot of EU, Ender?
I caught a bit of it. The thing is EU and NA tend to go on, like the end of EU and the start of NA happen around the same time. So I didn't actually get to watch the finals because our games had started at that point. Mm-hmm. But I've gone back and I've looked at some of the games and I was peeking through.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about obviously one of the biggest topics in EU that we were hoping to talk a lot more about on broadcast, I can assure you, was Nouns Esports sort of becoming a bit of a super team in EU. Obviously, this is the first tournament of the year. These are all huge players being put together, but I think a lot of people are surprised that we don't even get to see them in one of the top four games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think about like kind of a super team combining like that?
I mean, the Nouns roster definitely on paper seemed good. I think it's still, they're really stacked. I think they had some issues in the qualifiers, which made them go through the lower bracket. And I know for a fact they weren't even expecting to play through the lower bracket because we have this new format shakeup where it's a continuation from the qualifiers. In the past, you'd play the qualifiers, then there'd be eight teams left. They would reseed that bracket and everyone would start in the upper bracket. So you kind of felt like you had like an extra safety net. I like the new format. But I know for a fact Nouns wasn't expecting it. So to start in the lower bracket, basically if they lose one series, they're out. They lost a best of three and a game three. But I know they'll come back up. Mm-hmm. They're able to bounce back, so that's not an issue. But the team that won For Free, the other team in the final, Yala Bingo, I mean, it's not like those rosters are missing any key pieces, right? Like they have some pieces from what Tally Bobo was last year, mm-hmm. from last year Nouns, like in a way, Tally Bobo and Nouns came together to make Nouns, but they also kind of came together to make For Free, right? Zervis and Galu are on that team now.
Yeah.
And Sixies was against them, who played with Nouns last year. So, I don't know. All these teams are really, really stacked. And in the meta that we're in right now, it's because there isn't like an EX Pokemon like a Zacian or like something really powerful, there's Umbreon and Buzz. But not to get too much into the weeds of it.
No, let's get in the weeds. I want to hear. Sure. I want to hear your thoughts on it because it is interesting, right? When Buzzwole is like the most powerful Pokemon in the game. Yeah, but yeah, talk to me about the meta.
So because Buzz is like kind of the character people recognize as the best, some people would say Umbreon. I think they're both up there, maybe Clefable, whatever it might be. these Pokemon aren't, like, the gap between those Pokemon and what you would consider your quote-unquote average isn't as big as maybe what we've seen with, like, Urshifu during Worlds last year, or Zacian during Worlds, right? Like,
yeah,
the strongest Pokemon in the game aren't that good, and because of that, it makes draft really, really, really hard and really unpredictable, to the point where you can find yourself playing a game where even if you feel like you're the better team, because of the draft you ended up in, the game becomes that much harder to win, right? And with all the teams assembling, like, really good players, them knowing, like, ins and outs of the other teams, draft ends up becoming so, so hard that I think we're going to, like, this is not the first upset we're going to see this year. I think every tournament in EU and NA this year will have different winners, to the point where I don't think we'll see, I mean, maybe Nouns will prove us wrong, but the way Talibobo won all but one tourney in EU last year, I don't think we're going to see that again in either EU or NA. I think there's just, the teams are too good, and the game, unless the game goes back to there being, like, a really clear format, like, okay, you ban Zacian from second pick, mm-hmm. Mew is the best character, and then you kind of just have, like, one or two pieces. When it's like, when the game is really simple, I think better teams can thrive. When it's this chaotic, I think it really just comes down to the day of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, not to go too far ahead, but you start to get to the point, too, where having sort of, like, legit great comfort picks that the enemy team can't ban out becomes a very real strategy. And then mm-hmm. when lots of things are kind of equal, like, hey, maybe your Machamp is as good as that Buzzwole, like, depending on what you're able to do with it. We'll talk more about that in a bit, but mm-hmm. you're right. The meta is really interesting right now. I feel like, especially because it's the start of the season, like, things are just evolving in some really interesting ways. Like, right before the start of the season, maybe you as a pro player clocked this way early, but I thought with, like, Unity Clash and the LG tournament and all that, I was noticing things get thrown in where people were going, oh, we have to ban Leafeon, I guess. Like, I don't know if a lot of people expected that to be that powerful. So it feels like everyone's learning a lot very quickly. Do you think that there are Pokemon that are really being slept on right now? Like, that you were trying out in scrims and stuff like that, where you go, I actually think people are not ready for this, but it's going to be pretty big?
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. The easiest example of that right now is probably Dragonite, where, like, it's a character you see in the Eastern tournaments very, very regularly, and it's, like, kind of getting splashed in the West. Like, you'll see good teams pick it up, but it's not like, when, as you know, when you're watching these games, in the back of your mind, you're not like, okay, which team's gonna get Dragonite? You know, yeah. You're always thinking who's gonna get Buzz, who's gonna get Umbreon, things like that. So I think Dragonite is one of them. But what you said is definitely true, that comfort picks are matter more in this kind of meta. And I mentioned this before, I think you've noticed it as well. Pokemon Unite players aren't gods of the game.
Yeah. Like,
they all have their flaws.
Except for you and I, by the way. I just had to throw that in there. We actually totally figured it out, just so everyone knows.
The thing is that at Worlds, the reason why we didn't see a lot of Zacian from the Western teams, like EU and NA, was because their players weren't good enough at it. Right? And Dragonite's a hard character. There's a lot of people that just aren't good enough at Dragonite to play it. I think all the pro players in their roles can eventually learn every character, but with EOS being the first tournament of the year, people just, they can't play every character to the best of their ability. So the meta is kind of close. Why not just stick to what you're good at instead of what's, like, in theory good, right?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, I've thought about this before. You know, I've gotten the opportunity to play, like, not as serious of a tournament as you've played in, but I've played in some tournaments. I've played against teams like your former team, TTV. Like, I've played against top players, and I feel like, wow, these players are so great. Like, you can feel it. And then there are other times where you'll play against someone, you'll think, well, I think they have maybe two or three Pokemon. And that might be about it. And I think that's something that kind of happens with, like, a lot of these pros. Not that they're not cracked and great at the game, I'm not trying to say that at all, but they get stuck in a role and they really have, like, three options maybe that they're really good at playing, and they don't have a super deep roster. So a new Pokemon comes out, like I saw you guys messing around with Metagross, and I think a lot of people just don't maybe have the time or haven't really sat down to figure something like that out, even though it could be really powerful in the meta. They just maybe don't even have the time for it. Like, it reminds me of when everyone had to play Lucario top. It was no bans, mirror matches. Everyone had to play Lucario. So I don't even know how many Pokemon top laners even got good with. Or right now, you probably could get good with maybe Buzzwole and two other options. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. But I mean, it's like, if everyone was able to play every character in the game, the meta wouldn't be the way that it is right now. That I know for sure.
You've told me before that sometimes, you know, the meta or the tiers that Pokemon are in is just kind of what people are comfortable with playing, like what the pros like playing, what they're good with. We saw that with Machizzle. We saw that with Machamp in a sort of heroic fashion. Let's talk through EU really quick, because I do want to talk about that. You didn't get to see it fully, but the grand finals between Forfree and Yalabingo, I think, were super interesting, because it was one of those situations where you saw a great team full of great players from Forfree. I mean, these are people, Yalabingo. These are people that you know. Let me pull it up right here. We're talking about Sixies, Internal, Potato, Marv. What is this? Svim? Svim, was it? Sam. That's right. That's how he spells it. And that team just got absolutely rocked by Forfree. They beat Forfree in the winner's final, 2-0 them, even though those games were kind of close. But man, when Forfree came back in the grand final and the grand final reset, these games were not close. They were stomps pretty much the whole way through. I think one was somewhat close, but almost every game was a full-on stomp. So I have to assume what happened is they took a loss, like Yalabingo. They were put on ice for a while, waiting in the grand finals. They took a loss and then completely mentally, like, checked out. How often do you feel like something like that happens in a big tournament? What do you try to do in a moment like that, Ender, when your team is, like, mentally shot after a loss or something?
Yeah, it takes, like, a couple of people to just step up and try to get you out of the rut. I feel like I've been on both sides of it. Like first year AOS, we got grand final reset on by Full Send, and we lost. And then the last year regionals at NAIC, we won the bracket reset, which in both times it felt like the team from the loser side had like way more momentum after the reset, right? And I imagine that's probably what it looked like. Maybe even in EU, like, they just went through the reset, they just dominated. And I think what it is like, you get to the grand finals, you kind of have a formula of how you're going to play the game, and you take it safe, and that gets you to the grand finals. But when you have to play against a team that you've already beaten with that formula, it's like, as the winning side, do we want to take a risk? No, like, we've already won with this, why would we change things up now? But the losing team doesn't have anything to lose. They're going to do whatever it takes for them to win, right? So when you get reset on, it's got to be like one or two players coming up and being like, all right, it's fine. Clearly, they have our number on this. We need, like, do we have anything else prepared? Can we play anything else? Are we okay to just keep playing what we've been playing? Because we beat them with that earlier, right? And those types of conversations are what ends up making the difference between teams that can do well in tourneys and then teams that can win the whole thing, right? And I think if I look at these rosters, they're both really good that ended up in the finals.
Stacked.
But
like, these are stacked teams. Yeah,
they're stacked. But I think like there's got to be an edge that you have to give to like a team that has Zervis and Gatlu because they've just been there so many times, right?
Yeah, that's definitely what it felt like. And of course, it felt like that moment. Yeah, which happened. We saw that at NAIC, which like one of the biggest like craziest moments in UCS last year was TTV, your team, against Luminosity, the former and then that year world champions. The two of you went at it live at NAIC, you coming from the losers bracket, reset it on them. And I mean, this is easy to say in after the fact, but it really felt like watching it, they couldn't win. I don't know why, but after you had won a couple games and you were sort of drafting around them, it felt like you guys had really figured them out in draft. Like, it felt like every game you were watching, like, oh, TTV just won in draft again. Once a couple games went down, it felt like no matter what, your team was going to win. And I don't know why that is, but that's just a it's just a thing in sports. It's a thing in esports. It's just that momentum, that swing, that feeling of this team is on fire. You're on fire. This team is on fire, and this team is losing. I don't know why it is, but the bracket reset win happens a lot, and I think it happened 4 times like this last weekend in different regions. Like the bracket reset, it got reset, I think, 5 times, and 4 times the teams won, which is crazy.
Yeah, there's definitely some momentum to it, and it's hard to even describe. Like I said, I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the side where we're in the upper bracket, we've gotten reset on, and it's like you don't want to ever admit that it feels like we can't win or we can't lose, like depending on which side you're on, but it kind of does invoke that kind of feeling. It's weird.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, and I mean, everyone's obviously competing at a very high level, and you know the stakes of everything really changes, especially in the live events. Like, you see some people really come alive, you know, under the lights and the pressure on the stage, and other people like really shrink. It's pretty wild to watch. Let's talk a little bit about NA. Before we get in fully to NA, we talked about it a little here in EU, but we had a change to the format of the top 8 this year for the UCS, and nobody knew this was coming. I had no idea this was happening, and it definitely, for a lot of reasons, caused some controversy, and that was the top 8 bracket now is a continuation of the entire bracket. Like, it doesn't reset at top 8. Everyone gets reseeded, and then you go from there. It's a new double elimination bracket. It is a continuation of that original double elim bracket that we've been working from the whole time. And I think one of the biggest issues with this, just in general, was nobody was told. I think that's kind of the biggest problem with it all. I'm not sure I love it. I don't have a huge part of me that hates it either. It's just a different way to do it. It seems in some ways a little more fair. In some ways, based on seeding, maybe a little less fair. But regardless of any of that, I feel like the biggest issue to me was just that nobody knew this was coming. So a lot of teams end up in the losers round one. It doesn't change how the tournament's necessarily going to go, but it is a really unfortunate thing to find out. What were your thoughts when you kind of saw this new format?
On paper, it makes sense. Like, the qualifiers should be very important. You shouldn't be allowed to, not allowed, but you shouldn't be incentivized to sandbag the qualifiers, which I think in the past you might have. There might be an argument where sandbagging it could have been a viable option, as in, like, you know, maybe we lose, like, not we're going to lose on purpose, but, you know, we're not going to try as hard as we would in the qualifiers, because even if we lose, we just need to qualify out, and that's burned some teams in the past as well, where they drop down in lower brackets, suddenly they have an upset and they lose. But I think overall, like, going forward for the rest of the tournaments, this format is probably better. It puts more emphasis on the qualifiers. It kind of, like, it basically makes the Unite Esports into, like, a two-day event, which most MOBAs, even most competitive games like VGC and TCG, all are either 2 or 3 day tournaments. I think it feels good for viewers. Like, okay, this is where we ended. We're going to leave off. We're going to continue from here. And it kind of sucks for the teams because we didn't know about it, like you said at first. But if you're a competitor, you should be trying to win every game that's in front of you as hard as you possibly can. And if you got punished by it because you didn't try hard enough in the qualifiers, it feels shitty to say, but it's kind of on you, right? Like,
well, yeah, I don't love being, I don't know, kind of like flippant when people are complaining about things that they are, that matter to them in the esport. But sometimes the answer is like, yeah, but could you just win? Like, I get it. Yeah. Certain things aren't perfect, but how about you just win? And I know that's not the right answer. And I know that people are like care, they care so much and they're trying so hard, and when something comes up that they don't expect or whatever, it's really unfortunate. But also just please win. I don't know. I hate to be like that, but you know, you got to win at the end anyway, right? Just win. Speaking of just winning, there was the next part of this kind of like interesting controversy with the bracket is Luminosity got the opportunity to come into this top eight. So for everyone who watched the qualifiers, like, I actually caught the end of the qualifiers on your stream, Ender. We all saw Luminosity lose to RAQ, RAQ, and they would have been the team losing in ninth place. So they got eliminated, essentially, in the double elimination bracket. However, RAQ was not able to compete in the top eight. They knew that right away, I guess. They told the tournament folks that they were not available. The word I heard is they didn't expect to go that far. And they just weren't, they weren't able to compete next weekend. I don't know if like what exactly is true there, but given that RAQ dropped out, the next highest rated team that would have logically been there was Luminosity. Now, I think people are kind of split on this decision here. My take on it is if this bracket is a continuation of our group stage bracket, then I do think Luminosity has lost and Team YT should be getting a bye here in this first round. And the reason I think that, even outside of this one situation, is I just don't know what would happen if in the winner's bracket, you know, TTV said they couldn't compete. That doesn't mean you're going to move a team up to the winner's bracket who has already taken a loss. It feels like to keep the bracket logically consistent, you're just going to have to say Luminosity has already lost. Team YT is going up against RAQ. RAQ is not playing. Team YT gets a first round bye. That's what it would seem like to me. What's your take on that whole situation?
I agree. I mean, if it's a continuation, double elimination format, if the teams that are in the lower bracket to start their tourney are there because they already lost, it doesn't make sense to backfill with another team just because another team dropped. The issue, and I know that this happened in a couple of the other regions like that had AOS Cup qualifiers the same day, whether it's Latin America, North, South, Brazil, I'm not sure exactly which one. But they had teams that not dropped out like RAQ did, but were disqualified for breaking various different rules. And I think in those cases, it makes a little bit more sense to invite another team. Because if a team had been breaking the rules yes. during the qualifiers, then that kind of makes a whole mess. So I think maybe the admins kind of were just making decisions with that kind of logic in mind. So Luminosity did end up getting lucky. I saw a lot of people say like they have like these wild conspiracies yes. that like Luminosity yes. paid them off uh-huh. or the admins like are in bed with Luminosity. Obviously, none of that is true.
No.
It's just an oversight.
It's funny. Yeah. I'm so sorry to cut you off. I should have. I apologize. But yes, you're 100% right. Like, trust me, from someone who's like, I'm not behind the scenes making any decisions or anything like that. No one, I think, is making. First off, there's no conspiracy for any team. They don't care. Like, of course, they would like to see Luminosity. They're the champs. But there's also a huge storyline of them not qualifying. Like, whatever is happening, there's a story to tell and there are teams to watch. So they're not worried about making sure get Luminosity in there somehow. Slash has to play. Like, that's not what they're doing at all in this situation. I think, like most things, how do I say this? Someone made that decision who I don't think was even really considering what it meant, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
Like, I think just like a lot of things, like they changed up the bracket. And I think the person who made the decision to just fill the top eight hadn't even really considered what that meant for the tournament. They just wanted to fill the top eight like they have been doing, you know, for the previous two seasons, filling the top eight. They didn't put a lot of thought into sort of all the ramifications of filling that top eight. That's my take on it. I have not been told that. I don't know actually who filled it. But that's another reason I think that's the case, because there are just so many working parts with a tournament like this. And I think there's someone who's just looking at the bracket, making sure we have a top eight to put on broadcast. And that's what they did. That's what it felt like to me. I know it's not fair, I guess. Again, if it was up to me, I don't think they should have played. But also at the same time, they did play. And now it's up to teams to beat them. Let's go through the bracket here in NA really quick. We can talk about GT Alter Ego in the winner's semifinals. Alter Ego wins 2-0. TTV versus Exile in the winner's semifinals. Exile wins 2-1. Alter Ego wins 2-0 against Exile in the winners. And then we'll talk about the losers here in a sec. Alter Ego is going to go back up against Luminosity in the grand finals. So, Ender, I mean, you have the unique perspective of competing in this tournament. Tell me what happened in your tournament run here when you got into the top eight.
So we had a pretty good qualifier run coming up to this. We were feeling pretty confident just in ourselves. Not that we would go in and win, but we didn't feel like overly like nervous or anything about our results. As for our games, we had some very, very close games. I know a lot of people weren't able to catch them because it was the first round. But we went to a game three that came down to Rayquaza basically, like, you know, luck of the draw on which side gets, and we didn't end up getting it. But that's Pokemon Unite. That's a part of what you sign up for. But like I mentioned earlier, like, this meta is just, it's so open. Like, anything can really work. You can make a lot of good picks work. I think we had pretty standard drafts. Nothing was too crazy. As for my team in the winner's side, we lost a best of three. We lost one game basically because we went 1-for-1 and then we lost one team fight at Ray, or like we lost Ray and that was it. Right. So,
And then you drop down, you dropped into the loser's bracket. Luminosity beats Team YT 2-1, and then you go up against Luminosity. Was there anything that they were playing that maybe you didn't expect to run into?
Nothing that we wouldn't have expected. We practiced against them. We've seen them play in other tournaments. We had information on them. So nothing that we weren't expecting. They're the only team that really plays Meowscarada, which they had brought out in our game, which is a character I think is pretty good. Just we don't have enough people that are practiced on it, so I think that's why they're one of the only teams that really plays it. Has nothing to do with the character itself, but they just beat us two games. I think our second game against them was very, very close. We came out the gate swinging. I think we had a really good draft plan. I can even talk about the draft now that I'm not really playing anymore, so I don't mind. But basically, we get into the draft, and I'm like, okay, we've had good success with Metagross. Let's just set up a draft line where we can get Metagross, and it'll be a good game for it. So we play around Buzzswole being banned, because Buzzswole counters Metagross. We know that, you know, it's like, it's a closeout game. Overlord's going to want to play like a speedster kind of character. That's just his style. He likes to take control of the game. So we just need to have like a tanky kind of mon that's really hard for his style of characters to deal with. Whether he wants to play Meowscarada, Zoroark, whatever it is. So we line up the draft for Metagross. We have a really good start. Not going to play the blame game because I have a lot of respect for all the people that are involved. But we give up our early advantage. It comes down to Ray. We have like a good setup at Ray even. Still end up losing the Ray fight. And then the game one, I don't even remember what happened. But game two was, I feel like we really had them there. And then we end up losing the game and that was that. But nothing that we didn't expect. They brought the Meowscarada. I think the Metagross pick that we had was really, really good into it. And I mean, sometimes you just don't win. Like it's just, obviously you can play better at any point to win, but it's a 10-minute game decided on an objective that can make it so even if you're losing the whole 9 minutes and 30 seconds, you can win all of a sudden, right? That's just Pokemon Unite.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually never known what it's like to lose a match of Unite, but I feel like I've heard over and over again that this can happen. No, it's so true, too. Yeah. And I remember, I think it was Maybe it was Phil. I don't know who was talking about it, but when they were talking about this change to the bracket, they were talking about sort of Unite being at times like a high variance game. And it does have a lot of variance, you know, like at the end. Now, of course, the best teams are going to shake out at the end of it. Maybe not over the course of one tournament, but over the course of multiple tournaments, you know, you're going to see the best teams pop up again and again and again. But there are those moments that you just can't do anything about. You had a great fight. You had a great setup. Here comes a weird egg bomb or the Clefable rolled hyper beam. It KOs Ray and two players and all of a sudden they, you know, run and score. It's crazy.
One thing I have to say is after Worlds ended last year, I kept telling people, even at Worlds, I don't want to play Clefable. I always roll block at Ray. And every single competitive game I played last year at Rayquaza, I rolled block. And then in one of those games, we had lost the game, not because of what I rolled. But after the game ended, I'm like, how did I get block again? Like at Ray, like... It's actually happened 100% of my UCS games. At Ray, I've rolled block. To a point where I just expect it.
It's very crazy, too, because it is the one thing Clefable can get where you're like, come on. Like, almost everything else, I guess except maybe, like, a really unfortunate splash or explosion.
Yeah.
But almost everything else is like, all right, close combat, whatever. All right, fair enough. We got the hydro pump. But, yeah, you roll block and you just think, man, this really doesn't work. For yeah. what we needed to do. Continuing on with our tournament right here. In NA, we had Luminosity move forward against GT. GT kind of notoriously like one of Luminosity's kryptonite, I've called them. GT just seems to have Luminosity's number sometime. I don't know what it is, but they just do. They actually were the team that knocked them down to the losers in the first place. However, Luminosity beats them 2-1. Pretty close game. Felt like the Luminosity Exile game was not as close. I felt like Luminosity actually handled Exile pretty well. Then we moved to our grand finals. We have Luminosity against Alter Ego. Bracket reset, so they beat them 2-0. And then Alter Ego comes back to win a 2-1 in the grand finals. Really on the back of Machamp. Machizzle on this Machamp. It wasn't the only thing, obviously, that happened, but it's one of the most interesting things to talk about because Machamp, I think, on a lot of people's tier list is pretty low. It's, I mean, my opinion of Machamp is it's pretty mid, and it feels like the game has kind of forgotten about it. They could definitely buff Machamp or do something to it at some point, but Machamp kind of comes out. It's a pick maybe Luminosity doesn't really know how to play into. He nails every single Unite move in those games, which is huge because Machamp can have like a make or break Unite. And Alter Ego ends up winning. Did you get to watch any of the Luminosity Alter Ego games?
I watched some of the Ray fights just because I wanted to see what the Machamp was all about. I didn't watch all the games like from start to finish, but I caught a good chunk of them, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, what do you think of the pick? What do you think of the situation? Like, what does that mean to you? I mean, you've talked about it a bit earlier in the podcast, too, just about, like, kind of what the meta is like right now. Is this, like, a meta where we can bring out Machamp? Can people play Charizard? Like, where are we in this meta?
I think Machamp is playable. I can talk why I think Machamp specifically is, but I think Charizard probably has a place as well. I think even Gengar could even have a place, like characters that you wouldn't expect. Like, I think if there was like an AI drafting tool that perfectly understood the game, we would see characters like Machamp and Gengar and Charizard get picked.
Interesting.
Because like, I think most games follow like a very complicated rock, paper, scissors kind of formula, right? And when the game is like mostly balanced, that's when you get to see that rock, paper, scissors shine. And for Unite, the rock, paper, scissors roughly is like speedsters beat attackers, attackers beat all-rounders, and all-rounders beat speedsters, and speedsters go back to beating attackers. And they kind of exist in this like rock, paper, scissors. So if like, you know, Machamp is going to shine, it's going to shine a lot of situations where it's good against speedsters. Doesn't mean that it's bad into attackers or you can't flip the script or it's exactly like that. But it just means that characters that, on average, into, like, the lot of all the powerful Pokemon in the game might not be good. But if you're in a particular scenario, there might be, like, the Doctor Strange 1 in 1,000 kind of setup, where Machamp can be good or Charizard can be good. But with Machamp, it's just, it's not even that complicated, right? In the top lane, Buzzwole is like in the god tier of the top lane characters. Then people play Blastoise. And then after that, I don't even know what you would consider a top laner, like Blaziken maybe, Dodrio. There isn't like a lot of depth there or variety. And Machamp, I mean, it's pretty good early game last hitter. If you're good at the character, you can make it work late game. It has a surprise factor. Like when you're not expecting the Machamp ult, when you're not positioning around it, when you're not thinking about it every second, it can definitely dominate you. And I mean, that's what it ended up doing. Like they weren't, it's like a combination of the character being good enough to work in the top lane, it being enough of a surprise factor, and also Machizzle's just really good at it. That's his, yeah, that's his character, right? That's what really, I think that's what makes the game in the shape that it's in right now so cool, that if you're good enough at something, it can outweigh the theoretical, like, quote unquote balance of the game.
Are you saying nice. That you could maybe run like a support Greedent? Because we did get to see support Greedent, EXB share Greedent in the tournament. Do you think it could happen?
Greedent might be pushing the lines. There was this moment where we were playing, I was playing support Espeon almost as a joke because, you know, we're just laddering or whatever. And then we went on like a spree of where we just kept winning games against like all the top teams on the ladder, playing no healer, Espeon jungle, Espeon support. And then that's when we started to realize that, like, yes, draft is really important, but if you're just doing something people aren't used to and you're good enough at it, or the character is just good enough, you can make almost anything work in Unite. There's probably a line where Greedent is good right now. I just don't think people have figured it out.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. I think a lot, the game is so much closer balance-wise than it has been in a long time. We've actually had, right after Mewtwo Y, basically, once they nerfed that Pokemon, especially with them banned in, you know, ranked right now, but we have had a really wonderful time for balance, outside of Metagross being insane for like a week. We've had a really, really wonderful time for balance inside Pokemon Unite, which is really cool. Before we move on, just my, like, some last thoughts on the tournament for me. I thought it was really interesting seeing Luminosity. I thought their picks were very surprising. They were playing all of the sure hit Pokemon, basically. They were playing Stored Power Espeon, Icicle Spear Glaceon, Mean Look Umbreon. I was surprised, I have to say, to see the world champs play so many of the Pokemon that are the most easy to use in the entire game. Now, I don't think easy to use Pokemon, I'm not using that as an insult or anything like that. There's so much value in a Pokemon that does what it does, and it's not hard to make it happen. But I was kind of surprised to see all of like the sure hit Pokemon played by Luminosity. I thought that was interesting, where you would see, you know, Overlord would be the one kind of bringing out something like Meowscarada. But other than that, it felt like everything on Luminosity's roster was all very, very simple Pokemon to use. Not bad. I almost wonder if that was because they were swapping roles around and weren't fully ready for it. But what is your take on something like that, Ender?
I think you're kind of right. Like, Jungle Book's a great player, and he won Worlds playing Jungle in Season 1. But then he didn't play most of last year. And then when he did come back, he came back to play support for their team. And now suddenly he has to, within a week worth of time, literally it was a week, because last week he, when in the qualifiers when they lost, he didn't play jungle or attack or whatever role he's playing now. So I think it's a lot easier to gravitate to things like Glaceon especially, which is already a good character, and mechanically it's not going to be maybe as demanding as all the other things. And just staying like within a couple Pokemon realm is probably good too. So I think that's probably a part of it. Evolutions also, like, the thing about Luminosity is they love to win the early game and then just keep like snowballing their lead from there, right? And Evolutions are the best at doing that. They're immediately strong. Like, in theory, Leafeon could be one of, just by far, like, it should be the best character in the game, because at level 4 you just have the most damage priority over anything else in the game. And as long as your Leafeon literally never dies, and plays perfectly, it should be the best character in the game, I think. Or maybe not. So I think if you follow that philosophy to a T, all the evolutions probably should be the best as long as you play with zero mistakes. But everyone makes mistakes. Like no one's even close to playing perfectly at all. And when you add in different variables like Machamp, it just makes it a lot easier to start making mistakes. And that happened.
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense. I'm not sure what these mistakes are. I feel like when I play, I haven't really actually done any of those myself. But to be fair, I get what you're saying. And also, something I was just thinking about is, as a team, Luminosity loves to feed their carry player, Overlord. Like, feed him all the experience. And Pokemon that don't need a lot of experience to do well are the Eeveelutions. So if they're just like, hey, yeah, that's fine. We're online at level 10. We're basically the best Pokemon in the game already. Mm-hmm. Like, we're good. We're good at 4. We're good at 6. We're good at 10. We get our Unite at 8. They can use all of that extra experience to make sure that Overlord walks into, you know, the Ray fight at level 15 and is able to do a good job carrying the team. Unfortunately for Luminosity, it wasn't enough. Alter Ego wins and moves on to the Eos Cup. And speaking of the Eos Cup, I did want to talk a little bit about this. So it just recently got announced that there are the 6 regions that qualified for the Eos Cup play-ins. I'm going to get one of them wrong, I'm sure, but there's North America, Brazil, LATAM North and South, OC, and EU. I think I got them right.
And then Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there you go. Those are all one team gets sent to London to compete in the Eos Cup. They already are past sort of this Eos Cup group stage that's going to happen. And now it has been announced that 2 Japanese teams are invited to play at this tournament. So people are upset about this for a lot of reasons, and I actually, more than the change to the bracket, I do understand why people are upset about this change, specifically because these 2 Japanese teams did not need to win to secure their spots. There were just 2 teams that were invited. There could have been a lot of decisions behind the scenes as to why these were the 2 teams. Maybe they knew that these players were ready to travel and could make it happen. I really have no idea how they selected these 2 teams, but basically you have 8 teams that are going to the Eos Cup past the group stage. 2 of them are invited from Japan. I have a theory about why it's 2 Japan teams. But I'd love to hear your take on this situation, Ender, because obviously the pro scene is not happy about this.
No, I don't think I've heard any positive feedback regarding it. It'll be cool for the viewers, I think.
Yes.
Whenever the East and West get to play together on zero ping, that's a great experience. So I'm happy for the viewers. But for every other reason, it's pretty upsetting. My biggest annoyance with this is that they don't allow us as Western players to go and fly out and play in the Eastern events. So it doesn't really make sense to me that another world spot could potentially open up to them when they get to play in our events and we don't get to play in theirs. Also our prize pool got reduced as a result of accommodating for this event, which is cool because all of our prize pools got reduced, but we're all fighting for the same pot. So it was like, okay, we get it. But introducing like another element from the outside, I think that's just, it's not fair. But it makes for a really good viewing experience. So if that's what they're weighing, I mean, I get it. But yeah, I'm not happy about it. I don't think any of the NA or EU teams are really happy about it either.
Yeah. For everyone who is maybe unaware, like, last year, EU and NA both had 4 slots to go to Worlds. And this year, they both have 3 slots, and 2 tournaments have kind of taken a slot, the Eos Cup and then the final stretch. So you could reasonably say that EU and NA has lost a slot. However, one of them, of course, could win one of those tournaments and end up going. The interesting thing about the Eos Cup is it feels like it's sort of primed for a possible EU team to win, because I think most of the people trying to fly out to London to compete will probably be EU teams, just because that will be the easiest, you know, those players would have the easiest chance of getting to London. It's an expensive trip to fly to London to compete in a Pokemon Unite tournament, and the closer you are to London, the easier something like that is. Like, I think it's likely you're going to see some of the big EU teams there, and it's going to be a lot harder for other regions to make it happen. And then now we have Japan getting a couple of free invites. You're 100% right that from a viewer perspective, and I do think about this because it is important. You want the esport to grow. From a viewer perspective, it's pretty cool. Like, it's cool to see, like, a mini Worlds, right? Before Worlds. That is cool. But, yes, from a player perspective, especially in NA and EU who have lost a slot and other regions have not lost a slot, it feels very unfortunate, very unfair. My theory about it is maybe one spot was set aside for Japan. I mean, this is Pokemon. They care about Japan. It's their home base. They want to see some Japanese representation there, fair or not. I do believe the other spot was probably set aside for China. I really think so. And just the game is not ready yet. I think they don't know exactly how that relationship's going to work because the game's not even out yet. We don't know like how they're going to, obviously they're going to have to play on our client. They're going to be different games, right? So that's going to be really interesting. But I do think they want to have opportunities for China to play in some of these tournaments and have some representation. My like conspiracy theory is that one or maybe even both of those spots were just open for some sort of Chinese team to take it. That didn't happen, and now we have the Japanese teams in there. I think it's going to be cool to see. I do think if one of the Japanese teams wins, it's going to not be good. I think people are going to be pissed. They're already pissed, and I think once that happens, I think people are going to be pretty upset. Yeah.
I think so, too. At least it'll make for like a fun dynamic. Like I think everyone's going to go into the tournament with like their team that they're rooting for, their one or two teams. But when your one or two teams are out, like it's probably going to be like, okay, I'm just rooting for one of the Western teams to win.
Absolutely.
Like, Team West, you know, and then like all the Japanese fans that are used to seeing their favorite players, they're going to get exposed to our audience. Like, I think the tournament is great. Again, with the same thing what they did with the bracket continuation, I think people just want to know like what their plans are. Just tell us.
Yeah,
like,
for
there
sure.
There needs to just be some communication.
I agree. I think if they had said it beforehand that a couple teams like from the ACL are going to be invited to it, I think people would have still said that's not fair. But I do think when things get sprung on people, it's easier to be to go, what? Like, this is ridiculous. Because nobody knew that was happening, and it just throws another opportunity, like you were mentioning, for a Western team to somehow not get this slot. I think that would be an unfortunate way for that tournament to go if a Western team doesn't get that slot. But to my point earlier, just win, bro. Just win. Like, can you just win already? Come on, man. Just win. Something I wanted to talk to you about, Ender, because one of the biggest like things that happened in the Unite community recently was after AOS Cup, we saw Lutano tweet out that he was leaving TTV. I remember getting on your stream, seeing you talk about it, and then shortly after, you talking about TTV being done as a team. TTV was like the first Unite team, so I think everybody in the community like took it pretty hard that TTV no longer existed. So I just wanted to get some of your thoughts on that whole situation, like the original Pokemon Unite team not existing anymore.
Yeah, I think when the year started, when like 2024 started and we found out we weren't going to be able to play with our top laner anymore, we had kind of soft already at that point talked about like maybe we just call it. Like me and Lutano especially were talking like, yo, like we're getting older, like, you know, this has been fun, but like how much longer can we really do this for? And I think there was a point before even the qualifiers that we were like really close to just calling it and not even playing in it. And I remember just one day, like in the middle of the night being like, okay, no, we have to give it like one try. Like we can't just not play. Like we practiced, you know, yeah, we're gonna have to get someone. We'll get someone. We'll figure it out. And then Hitman shows up in our DMs because we put out like a request. Being like, hey, I just moved from Colombia. I've played in all these other games. I haven't played a lot of Unite. Do you guys want to play with me? And we're like, sure, let's do it. So Hitman, he played like Arena of Valor, like League of Legends Mobile, like all the other mobile like hits. and he was really good in them. But at the same time, you know, he hadn't played Unite. Like, we had to like send him money for him to buy Glaceon because he didn't own Glaceon. Like, we're like, hey man, you're not playing Charging Charm on Leafeon. And he's like, oh, I don't own the item. And we're like, okay. But we had to like, there's a lot of big learning curve, which, you know, not to put the fault on him because he played pretty well in a lot of the games. You know, Unite's not an easy game for as much as, you know, we like to say there's sure hits, there's this. It's a 10-minute game where a 10-second mistake can cost the entire game. Like, if you walk off your pad, the enemy team has a stacking character, and they make it past you and get to dump 20 points, get their first stack, die for a second one, you could have possibly just thrown the entire game off of that one mistake. And that kind of urgency, that expectance, like, no one has that when they first play Unite, and it's a really hard thing to get used to. And we just had, you know, TTV's always had like a style to our play, like it's changed over the years. But after that tournament, after EOS, you know, me and Lutano had a chat, and it's like, we're already thinking about calling it. Lutano's like, you know, I want to give it a chance to put myself out there. If there's an existing team I can join that can win Worlds. And he talked it over with me, and I'm like, you know, you have my approval. Like, we're not on bad terms, no bad blood with any of the members. But yeah, all good things have to come to an end. And I think that was just our end.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough from, you know, someone watching it for so long who loves TTV, and I know so many people watching like love TTV. Like the amount of people rooting for you guys in season one, and then of course season two. Like seeing TTV at regionals win in that bracket reset was it that felt like, and I know this probably doesn't feel like this to you because you want to win Worlds, like that's what your eyes on, but for me that felt like TTV did it, like the story of TTV, like the team everyone rooted for and then somehow lost year one, because year one was really hard to win, by the way, like the way you have to qualify for Worlds is insane year one. Year two, like you coming back in that bracket reset and then winning live at NAIC just felt like such like a great, obviously not your final moment, but almost like a great like way to sort of finish out TTV's story in Pokemon Unite. It was such a like such a crazy cool thing to watch, you know? It was really, really cool. And obviously, yeah, like I said, I've always loved your guys' team, had so much love for you, Ender, and all the boys. It was wonderful watching you compete. So I'll definitely miss TTV. I know a lot of people will, but I'm excited to see what you end up doing. Do you want to talk a little bit about what your thoughts are moving forward?
So one thing that I did all throughout season one and two was help other UCS teams prepare for events, whether it's like LAN events, Worlds, whatever it is. You know, like with coaching, with like guidance, whatever it might be, helped a lot of players achieve a lot of their goals as well. So, and I've had a tough time balancing that with competitive. There's conflict of interest. I would have like people that I would be competing with in a tournament like 2 weeks down the road reach out and be like, hey, can you coach my support player? And I'm like, no, dude, like, I can't do that. Like, we're gonna play each other. But now having the freedom to unilaterally help as many people as I can, that's what I'm really, really excited for. And I run Ender University, which I had to put a break on just because how much competitive was taking from me. And I really, really like draft. I know you've said it a lot of times, we're not ready for draft.
Have I said that? I don't know if I've ever said that.
So yeah, I want to try to make content that can help people feel like they're ready for draft. And I don't know, Pokemon Unite's such a cool game. It would be a shame for me to just walk away from the game as a whole. So I'm gonna be around. I think for a lot of people, it won't even be that different because I do play a lot of solo queue. I do a lot of content anyways. And you never know, like nothing is set in stone. next year, maybe we come back and play again. You never know.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what you do. I see in the chat, Husky says they love Indra University. I'm also a big fan. I love that series. I think the way you explain things is amazing. I obviously could imagine you would be a top tier coach, and you are a top tier player and just a top tier dude. So I'm glad,
Thank you.
I'm excited to see what you do, man. There's more I want to talk about, something I know that you were talking about a bit. I mean, now that Ender is not competing competitively, obviously Logan Paul saw that as an opportunity to join the Pokemon Unite scene. So for a quick rundown of this, everyone, this is real. I have to say this right away. This is real. Logan Paul during UCS tweeted out that he is interested in playing in the Pokemon Unite. I can't remember what he called it. He didn't call it the right name, but he wants to play in the Pokemon Unite Championships. And he's looking for a team. And at first, there was a community note on his tweet that this was a hidden ad. But I can tell you from being around Pokemon people, everyone was like, there's absolutely no way we would ever pay Logan Paul to
No,
do a
I'm
hidden ad.
actually, I'm actually on the community notes team for Twitter, and I can go and see all like the edits and whatnot. And everyone was just saying, there's no source on this. What, like, why are we promoting this? Like, that was completely fake news. Yeah, they
Yeah.
didn't pay him for anything, 100%.
No, he really plays Pokemon Unite. Not a lot yet, but he really plays Pokemon Unite and is looking for a team. Obviously, this was met with a lot of like a varied reaction. Like a lot of people had a lot of different takes on Logan joining Unite or playing Unite or attempting to play in the championship series. I think just a few things I would say about it really quick is first off, I don't know if he's even gonna do it. I mean, like, I don't know if he's gonna actually be able to try to compete. It's a lot more than you expect. I was talking about this on a recent video, but Logan is in the early stages of like the Dunning-Kruger effect, where you don't know a lot about what it takes to actually be good. You're just in the early stages, and you think you have an outsized view of your skill at something, essentially, which is the Dunning-Kruger effect. When you first get into something, you're like, "Hey, I'm actually pretty good at this." And Pokemon Unite, to their credit, really makes you think like that with bot games and stuff like that. So Pokemon Unite kind of fuels that a little bit, and then you start to gas yourself up and you think you can compete in the championship series. And then, of course, a lot of people were saying they don't want Logan around. I know, Ender, you said you would not be interested in doing anything with Logan. You've got some opinions on this whole situation, so why don't you hit me with it?
I don't normally like go to Twitter or any social media platform to be like, I'm putting my foot down. Like, I feel like a lot of times most of the people around, not all of them, for sure not everyone, but most people in Unite are like well-intended people. They make mistakes, they say things that they shouldn't, obviously. But I feel like most people are good people and everyone's just trying their best most of the time. I feel like I can't give that same level of charitability to someone like Logan Paul. I've done my own research. My biggest thing is if you take money from the people that make your stuff happen from your viewers and you do them wrong, that's like the biggest sin you can do as a content creator. But I don't feel like I need to impose my sense of morality on other people. So I feel like he should be allowed to play. I don't think he should be banned from playing. I think anyone should be allowed to play with him if they want. But I had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, "Are you going to play with him? You should coach him. What if you got him on an episode of Indra University?" And I just had to put it out there, like, this is not something I support, but I also made it very clear that should anyone else play with him, that's cool. That should be their own thing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are a little mixed on it, right? I'm definitely mixed on it. The thing I'm most mixed on is I don't know a lot about Logan Paul, but I can see from people's reaction like people don't like Logan Paul, so there's obviously a lot to that. I don't know enough about Crypto Zoo. I don't do anything with crypto, so already like that's not something I look into at all. But I understand like that. whole area is, you know, very shady. So I do get it. Really quick from the chat, I see your bits. Thank you, Francine. Since we're talking about this, how many games do you guys think makes you not new anymore? So Logan, I can't remember what it was, but he's played like 600 some games of Pokemon Unite, which is a very, very small amount of games. You know, he's still running Potion on a lot of Pokemon. So I think he's really just learning. How many games do you think it takes to make you not new anymore, Ender?
My take on it is that games played just isn't a good metric. Like, I've seen what people in Masters look like after 10,000 games. And those Cinderaces, as far as I'm concerned, are still new. So I don't know. There's not a number you can put on it. All I'll say is competitive Pokemon Unite is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I don't think he could catch up to like anyone's level in any reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, he would have to be put on a team with four players who are very, very good to really have a shot there. And even then, that would be extremely difficult, right? As I've said before, like, I've played sort of on teams like put together for a tournament. Like, oh, it'd be fun to play in it. They asked us to play. You know, I don't play competitive Unite. I mostly play solo queue. And I remember a team I was on with a lot of really good players. We ran into you guys last year, TTV, in a game. And obviously, you beat the brakes off us. Like, it wasn't a close game. You guys really beat us. You were way better than us at competitive Unite. There's a huge difference between what you're playing in solo, duo, trio, even five stack on ladder, and what a competitive game looks like, and what a real competitive team looks like. So, yeah, I don't think it's likely that Logan has any shot at doing that. So for everyone who's worried about Logan in the game, I don't think you have much to worry about, honestly. I think the worst that could happen is he shows up in a qualifiers and probably doesn't do too well. Probably, right? I don't want to count him out. I don't know him. Maybe he ends up being a great player. And then I think the best that would happen is maybe some extra people learn about the game. That would be about it. Yeah.
I have a conspiracy, though, and this is my one conspiracy. Everyone gets one conspiracy
they're
allowed to just say without criticism.
Yeah, yeah.
And mine is that because he mentioned the tennis player, Nick Kyrgios, that that's who introduced him. And I did a little bit of sleuthing, and I looked through his API, and I saw that he had been duo queuing with some pros from OCE as well. Logan Paul was. I think that someone in OCE has told Logan, like, look, OCE is getting two slots at Worlds. We can make a good enough team that we just need to qualify. And then you can go and say how I, Logan Paul, went qualified for the Pokemon World Championships. And that's his whole bit and angle. I will say the OCE teams are not as bad as people give them credit for. So I don't think he could do it. But I think that's the angle and that's what he's being told. And I think all you have to do is show that you live in OCE and you played from there for the tournament. He could afford to rent an apartment and play from there for a qualifiers. Why not? That's what I don't think. I'm not saying I've heard anything behind the scenes, but that's my theory.
That's a great theory. And I mean, look, I'm not here to like trash OCE. I think they are a region with some strong players. They are also a region with like 12 players. So, yeah. I mean, NA had something like 150 plus teams that actually made it to the first qualifying tournament. OCE had 18 sign up, only 16 even competed. So if you're looking for a way to Worlds, it's through OCE. That's for sure. So that conspiracy theory, if it's not what's happening, I just want you to understand you did just speak that into existence, by the way. Somehow.
I hope I'm not giving him ideas, but that's, yeah.
Dude, it's just how the world works, man. The second you start talking about it, like someone's just going to pop into his DMs and start to mention that or something like that. And all of a sudden, Logan's, you know, checking out his new place in Sydney and he's playing some Pokemon Unite. So get ready, everybody. Let's talk a little bit. I want to get into draft because you're a huge fan of draft, and I actually think we might not be ready for it. But really quick, before we hop into that, there's also a lot of drama, and that's not the right word for it. I don't want to use that word, but that is what I wrote down on my list. There's a lot of drama in the Unite community right now, and drama is not a fair word. I'm already saying that's not what I'm trying to say. What I would like to say is I don't think this podcast is the absolute best place to fully get into all of the goings on in the Unite community with some of that stuff, especially with people involved that aren't around, you know, not, they aren't around to maybe defend themselves, or, you know, it's easy for me on the sidelines to say what I would have or should have done or anything like that, or for me to call out, you know, people in the community who I think are not acting in good faith and people's apologies and this and that. I'll just say, because I really do think this, I've met so many amazing people in Unite from every end of the spectrum. Like I've been around Chris Heroes. Yes, I know, people are going to lose their minds, but I have. I've met you in person, and I got to hang out with you. I've been around Overlord. I've been around Phil. I've got to do a podcast and talk back and forth with people like Crunches. I've talked to people who are very competitive, people who are, you know, huge members of the community who have nothing to do with the pro scene. And something I have found is almost everyone has been very nice, very cool, and I like them considerably as people. I think in a lot of these situations, a lot of what's going on, I think we lose the fact that the person on the other end of whatever is happening is an actual person, and they're actually like a pretty decent human being. That's what I've found in my experience. And of course, I don't know everything about everyone. I would have handled a lot of these situations different, but I just kind of wanted to say that I think if we treated each other a little better and just gave each other the benefit of the doubt and remembered that we're probably not that bad of a person, I think things could be a little nicer in the community. That's just my take on it. I'd love to hear from you.
Wrong.
Like, okay, I knew it.
Damn it.
Why did I even start saying it?
No, I think I agree. People just need to be a little bit more compassionate. I think I understand both sides of the argument, you know. One side is pushing for accountability. Mm-hmm. You have an audience, you know, you have expectations. The other side is, we're just trying to play the game. We didn't mean anything wrong of it. Both sides, like you said, I think could act more in good faith a little bit more. But I think if we got all the parties involved in like one big call, I think everything could get sorted out in like 10 minutes.
I agree.
Like, I don't think it's that complicated. I think most people are good people. They just find themselves behind a Twitter argument, and then it's kind of hard to let go.
Yeah. I'm totally there with you. Because I think anytime you've done something wrong, and I'm talking about you specifically, anytime you've done something wrong, I think you want to, you know, if someone came to you and they'd say, hey, this didn't make me feel good, I didn't like this, you would immediately go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, of course I wouldn't want to make you feel like that. There's something about the internet, Twitter especially, when you remove like the humanity of a situation, it just becomes that Twitter account against this Twitter account and everyone retweeting it. You kind of quickly like lose all of that, and it's a lot harder, I think, for someone to say sorry, and I think it's also a lot harder for someone to accept it, because you kind of get gassed up too on like all of it. Like, there are people gassing you up on both sides, like, yeah, fight the power, and then there are people on the other sides that are like, yeah, fight the power, you gotta fight the power. But I totally agree with you. I really do think almost all these situations, if people got together, they would squash it really fast. Really fast, you know. But let's move on from quote unquote drama. I don't know who called it that. That must have been you, Ender. Let's talk about Draft, something even more controversial than all of that. Draft is coming to Pokemon Unite. It's here in like less than 2 weeks, or almost 2 weeks, right? It should be dropping on Pokemon Day for Master Rank, which I have to assume is going to work exactly like the EX licenses. So if you have any players in Master Rank, it will probably just put you into a draft game. That being said, maybe they slightly change that as well. It's going to be great, I think, for the game, and it's going to come with a huge learning curve. And I think there are some big issues, but I want to hear your thoughts on Draft, because this is something we've all been waiting for a really long time.
Yeah, I think if you feel like as an individual you're ready for a draft, like as one individual player, the game itself will be marginally, if not a lot better for you. As a whole, as Pokemon Unite as a whole, I might agree with you that we're not ready for draft. People are going to do very dumb things. We're going to have like four attackers. Someone's going to be on last pick and they're going to lock in Decidueye. And that's going to feel even more annoying now than maybe it did before. But there's an element of draft that I think not enough people talk about. I've heard people bring it up. But you get to now change your battle item setup based on what your opponents and what your teammates have before, like, without having to guess. So if you locked in Sylveon because you're like, today I feel like playing Sylveon, and then you see the enemy team comp and you're like, okay, I really can't go Hyper Voice this game. I need to go Mystical Fire. You're not going to feel trapped that, oh, I have the wrong item set on, right? Oh no, I locked in a character that needs full heal into all their CC, but I'm on X speed. Like, all those things should go away for the individual. From a whole people just sucking at wanting to improve, I don't even think people are necessarily just bad by default. It's just the general player base feels to me that people aren't curious enough to want to improve.
Yes.
And that's why we get stuck in these like weird holes. But I think for the individual, it's going to be a lot of fun. What I'm scared of the most is how buggy it is right now for tournament play and how many tournament games people don't even know went on because of mispicks. Like, we had a game on stage at NAIC against Luminosity where we accidentally picked the wrong character. We picked Buzz when we didn't want to pick Buzz. Buzz was still a fine character, but our guy locked in Buzzwole, and we're like, you know, instead of panicking and, you know, making them freak out, we're like, oh no, actually, this was actually what we wanted. This is great. Afterwards, we're like, we definitely didn't want Buzzwole there, but that's going to happen so much. Like, the swap features are buggy. I know how to work all the bugs most of the pro players do, but for example, if two people have swap stuff, one person does the swap, it'll cancel the other swap, and that person has to redo the swap, or it'll show up on their screen, but not for everyone else. There's bugs with scrolling around on the different characters. There's an optimal way to sort through draft on the characters. All of this, if they don't have a patch to fix it, is going to be a nightmare the first couple days, weeks, maybe the whole time we have draft. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm 100% there with you. In my video called We're Not Ready for Draft, I think that I talk about this a lot, that the client is not good for draft. First of all, a lot of the things you brought up. Second, in the current system, if they just put this in and put it into the game, you don't know if you're first pick or not. You only know that competitively because you know where you load in. In the actual draft, it does not tell you until you are picking that either first or second pick. So there are so many things that I think they have to fix for draft to come to ranked and really, really work. And I agree with you. It's funny you use the word curiosity. That's a word I use a lot. I do think a majority of the player base, unfortunately, is not curious as to how to get better at this game. Because every game that's out there, there's not a single one that you can play at a high level just by doing in-game tutorials. It just doesn't exist. Like, you have to be curious. You have to look. You look online for guides and you see like, oh, what does this person think of the tier list? What are the pros playing? What does this look like? What, you know, I think there isn't enough of that in the regular ranked player base inside of Pokemon Unite. So I do think you're going to run into a lot of situations where your team's getting ready for a good draft, but let me tell you, your lowest MMR player with that last pick, we assume, we don't know how they're going to sort it, but your lowest MMR player with that last pick, they're picking Golgetter Zeraora. They never hovered it. They never had an opinion about it. That's what they're doing. They just don't care. They simply don't care. They're picking Golgetter Zera, and it's time to go. Like, let's go. I do think one of the things that you talked about that's going to be really exciting is a possible shakeup with your held items in the game. Curse items are going to get so much more value because you're going to see what you're running into, even though I think curse is pretty much good all the time. Like, there's so many Pokemon with self-heal in their kit. But curse items get a ton of value, and this may be like the rise of the assault vest. We actually get to see an item where you go, hey, the entire enemy team is special attack, or I know that their big carry is going to try to delete me in the Ray fight, and I want to make sure that I can withstand like a whole combo from it. I can run assault vest. Do you think there are any other things like that that you're most excited about?
There is actually. I feel like it's like the forgotten item of Pokemon Unite, and that's a really good title for a YouTube video as well.
I'll write it down. Yeah, don't even try to make that. I know you're making content more now, but don't even. You're out of your mind. Yeah. This is my podcast, and that's my idea.
Shed Ninja Doll. Like, I feel like even competitively, just no one really gave it a chance, but. If you're playing ladder and you see you're up against like a Glaceon and a bunch of other like targeted sure hit moves and they don't have something that they can follow up after your doll, like there's a lot of supports and defenders especially that don't need eject button, especially supports. They don't, a lot of them run X speed. You could just run doll instead, and it makes or breaks some matchups. Like if anyone wants to abuse doll next season, if you see you're up against a Mimikyu, that character cannot do anything to doll. You doll after Shadow Sneak, it misses its combo, then it's dead. So that, I think that item should see more play for sure. Yeah,
that's really cool. I hadn't really thought about that. And something that, you know, I think I was talking to you about this a little bit with the idea of us not being ready for draft is that outside of solo, duo, trio, it's actually going to be really great four, five stacks wanting to practice a very, very, very close version of what they'll play in the championship series. Like this actually makes the ranked ladder much, much more reasonable for five stacks to go in and get ready to play a tournament, just to get on ladder and start. You draft against real teams and you ban out Pokemon you'd want to ban. Like, I think that could be huge for teams.
Yeah, I think so too. It's long overdue. Like in season one of Unite, it was fine because you literally didn't have draft and competitive, so you didn't need it in ranked. Season two, we saw the more and more the EX Pokemon were coming out, Mewtwo, Zacian, whatever, that ranked was almost unplayable. I mean, in any game mode, Mewtwo Blissey made the game unplayable, realistically. But now, whether you're like a competitive team, like on the top looking to practice on ladder, or you're like a group of five friends getting together, you can actually play a game and not feel like you're just getting, you know, Comfy Zoro checked in half your games because you didn't pick Slowbro or have a good enough answer. And that alone should make the game way more fun for any five stock.
Awesome. I think that we're coming to the end of our podcast here, Ender. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on any of the new Pokemon, or you know what? Actually, there was one thing I didn't get to that I wanted to talk to you about. I think it's a good conversation. And chat, you can throw in some of your answers here too, and we can read some of them out. I want to talk to you. Obviously, we have a patch coming. When you have the championship series, you kind of understand that they start to adhere to oftentimes a more usual patch schedule, where after a tournament, usually it's a week, maybe it's two, after one of the big tournaments, they will have a patch, and then you'll get some balance changes to the game. It'll give them a week to fix any bugs and another week before a tournament. So we probably have a patch coming very, very soon. I'm curious what you would like to see. My first thing is, I think they need to do something with Charizard. I would really like that Pokemon to be kind of as good as like Blastoise and Venusaur. It feels like it's sad that Charizard's at. But what are some changes you'd like to see, Ender?
Charizard's a good one. Funny enough, it might be getting nerfed next patch too. Just with how they're changing some items. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Charizard's a really good answer. I think the power level of many of the Pokemon is adequate, and I'd like to see them bring down some of the more stronger things. Umbreon is one that sticks out to me. That Mean Look, I don't think we can have another patch of Mean Look being exactly the way it is. It needs something changed. Like, I don't care what it is at this point, I'll take anything, but they got to do something about that move.
Isn't it absolutely insane? I want to bring this up because someone brought this up in the chat earlier. I thought it was a great point. So Mean Look has an 8-second cooldown, right? At lower once you get a little cooldown reduction once you start leveling up. But it has an 8-second cooldown, and they are stuck inside this zone for 3 seconds. So the uptime on this move is unbelievably high. Like, Mean Look is up all the time. It is a sure hit, and they are stuck there, just ready to get hit by really anything that the enemy team throws at you. And my chat brought up, after watching a recent video of mine, that Yawn has a 12 second cooldown. You have to aim it. It has a 12 second cooldown, and it just puts them to sleep for a little bit. Like, they can wake up faster. Let me see how long it puts them to sleep for if nothing hits them. Yawn puts them to sleep for up to 3 seconds, but if you take damage, it will reduce the duration. So it has the same amount of time you're stuck. You have to hit it. You can't sure hit it. You literally have to hit it, and then they can wake up from it. How insane, like, the power creep between those two moves is unbelievable.
Yeah, and Mean Look gives Umbreon every basic attack in there a boosted, which also heals Umbreon, so it makes them tankier. And you get Mean Look at level 4 as opposed to Yawn. You get it, have to wait till 7 to get it. I don't like to always just bring up power creep, power creep, power creep, but that's a really good example of it. It makes no sense for Mean Look to be the way that it is. And I hope, like, a couple months from now, it'll have been nerfed, and we'll look back and be like, how did we play the game with this existing in the way that it did?
It is pretty wild, isn't it? I'm going to read some of the options from the chat. Let's see here. Clefable, Glaceon, Umbreon, Buzzwole, and Inteleon need nerfs. I think all of those Pokemon could definitely see a round of nerfs. Buzzwole is a Pokemon that feels like it's not going to make it to the end of the season looking the way it does right now. I could be wrong, but it just feels like top lane is way too important and Buzzwole is way too good. What are your thoughts on Buzz?
Yeah, Buzz, it has, like, you know, amongst all the other things that it can infinitely combo you, it does a lot of damage, it's so tanky, it has all these good things. It also just has this weird unwritten thing about its kit where its stuns supersede all the other stuns in the game. Like, if you're playing Pikachu with Voltackle, you get hit by, like, a mime thing, and, like, your Voltackle maybe gets canceled, or your Electro Ball gets canceled, or whatever, right? You're playing Buzz, your moves will never get canceled. It'll go through everything in the game. If you're superpowering someone, short of you getting Slowbro United, it's just gonna keep following through. It also just cancels some moves in the game, which it doesn't say anywhere that it's supposed to do that, but it just breaks Rapid Spin on Blastoise. It just stops, like, Icicle Spears on Glaceon. It just does these weird things for whatever reason, on top of the character doing an insane amount of damage, being good at every series. Like, it just, yeah, it has too much to its kit. I don't see it surviving the whole year without some nerfs for sure.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, interesting in the chat. I saw someone talk about Duraludon needing a buff. I think it's almost like they have to do something to the entirety of the auto attackers if you want to see them work really well in competitive. I will say, in non-coordinated play, they're actually all totally viable. Like, they all do lots of damage from range, especially with people who are out of position and stuff like that. It's you can get a lot done with these Pokemon. What do you think they would have to do with sort of the, like, ADC role to make them more viable in Unite?
I think what happened with the opposite end, with, like, all the special attack mage kind of characters, is that they got Spoon, and Blue Buff got changed from being, like, an ADC buff to being a caster buff. On top of them just being stronger in general, like, the game kind of just, whether it's intentional or not, just started to favor those types of characters. So I think something like that, like, would need to come out for physical Mons. Like, a physical Spoon sounds scary, so maybe not that. But something in the realm of that, I think, would instantly elevate all of them. If Blue Buff got changed to the old Blue Buff, you would see at least a couple of them back, just because it only really worked on those types of characters, which is weird to think about. It's been 2 years since the old Blue Buff. Sometimes I even forget what it does, but it used to just do bonus damage to wild Pokemon if you were basic attacking them, right? So I think something like that would probably bring them back. Or they could just keep buffing their numbers like they did with Dragapult. Like, it doesn't take much to make a character good. You just give it 20% in a stat, it'll be good, right? So,
yeah, of course, they could always do that. I always would love it if they came up with more interesting solutions. Like, for instance, with Gyarados, Gyarados is a Pokemon that probably is going to get a buff. I mean, just like every Pokemon released recently, it was released pretty underpowered. It has a few things that are pretty cool, but I would always hope they do something more interesting, like, you know, a move like Gyarados's waterfall. I would hope that they would do something to maybe make that more fluid, easy to use, not as easy to get stunned out of Aqua Tail and stuff like that. Like, let the moves attack faster, just perform differently altogether. I remember a long time ago when they changed Flamethrower on Charizard. Charizard used to have to stop moving and then throw Flamethrower. Like, when you use the move, you essentially, you would stop and then throw it. When they changed it just to where Char could throw Flamethrower while kiting, moving back and forth, that was a massive buff for this Pokemon. It's just so much easier to play. And I would love to see more changes like that. I don't know really how you're going to get away with a ton of that on the auto attacker role. They're kind of basic. They press the A button a lot. But in general, I would love to see changes like that. I think those changes are the most exciting. When things just kind of work a little differently, and then all of a sudden, they're so much more viable. That's the kind of stuff I would love to see.
Yeah, I mean, I like, and this might be a little hit or miss with people, but I like Dragapult having like a quest basically built into it where you get knockouts, you get damage, right? And if that's the kind of like line they want to take, like, okay, ADCs are the characters that scale both into the late game from experience, but they're also rewarded for knockouts, right? And if that's something they wanted to do, or anything unique, like the Charizard thing, like you said, That would make it a lot more interesting. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, because you're right. That was a huge... It wasn't even a change for Dragapult. They just kind of buffed that ability in like five ways, right? But that would be a cool way to do it, because these are those crazy carry Pokemon that you get towards the end of the game, and you would want them to be super powerful. But there are just... First off, it's kind of hard because they don't play well in lane all the time. But yeah, second, maybe if they did scale in a really cool way, kind of the way you feel them in a game like League of Legends, where by the time you're in the late game, it's not only your stats, but you've built up this item set that's really bananas on some of these auto attackers. Maybe a feeling like that would sort of fix the ADCs a little bit. I want to see if the chat had any other ones that I hadn't noticed here before we end. Yeah, Aqua Tail, make it faster, fewer hits needed for sure. You could do something with Azumarill. You could. I like Azu, but it definitely does feel like, especially late, it feels like it falls off. Early, I think,
you know,
it's really solid.
On the topic of Azumarill, I had this thought today in the morning where Azumarill's built like what I would want an evolution to be, right? It evolves at 4. It gets its move at 6. It's United 8. It feels really impactful in the early game. And then the late game is like, if you didn't dominate, it's not that good, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like what evolutions should be, but aren't.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because that is how Azu feels. You can walk to the end game and feel really powerful because of how well you did early, you're right. But then other times, if you just kind of got crushed early, it's like, hey, man, this was when you were really good. You should have tried to take advantage of it a little more, because now you're running to the end game and it's tough. A few I'm seeing here, Scissor Scyther. I feel like these Pokemon are always in the position to need some buffs, and they do have Hollowear coming out, so I would expect that they kind of take a pass at some of these Pokemon. And then I do see Pupitar in the chat. It does feel like, for the value something like Tyranitar brings late game, it's weird that its value is equivalent to some things that don't need to go through all of the stages of being bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, their EVs get good at level 4. They're actually pretty amazing at level 13 too. Tyranitar, terrible until finally level 9. It doesn't really seem that fair, because it's not like they're that much better. A T-Tar is that much better than Glaceon or something. In fact, probably worse. So I do think they could change something with Tyranitar. I agree with the chat right there.
I agree. One that I saw was to nerf Cramorant. It's been long enough that we haven't seen a Cram nerf.
That's
so
true.
Could throw one of those in too.
They always love just like kind of like dropping a Cram nerf amongst all these other changes, where they're like, yeah, I guess this also makes sense. This thing is pretty crazy. I think my theory is, they didn't want Cram to be as good as it is, and they're kind of mad about it. Like, it's literally the punching bag in all their videos where they're showing off moves and stuff like that. I think they're annoyed with the fact that Cram's, like, dive kit has always been really, really good, and they can't really do anything about it, because it's just it's a pretty strong play style, you know? Might not work in a lot of competitive formats, but, you know, in most situations, being able to dash a whole bunch of times and then hit with a massive boosted attack is actually pretty dang good. And
it's good in competitive. LG lost to it in their qualifying match. So,
oh, that's right. They did, didn't they? There you go.
Cram's not bad, yeah.
All right. I think we did it, Ender. Is there anything you wanted to talk about before we left? I think we did a great podcast, man.
I think it was great. I got to talk about my team, TTV, which I know like is close to a lot of people. And I heard a lot of people were sad. Just want to remind people that, like, imagine how sad you are from as an outsider, how it felt for me too. So
you're gonna make me even more sad right now. I didn't even realize I could be more sad about it, but obviously I am now.
But holy. nothing is permanent, right? So you never know. Yeah. But I loved it. I had a great time. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, dude. Thank you so much for being here. And again, I love me some TTV. And I love me some Ender, so I'm so happy that you agreed to come on and chat with me about Pokemon Unite. And I know you begged me to do the drama section. I'm still mad at you that you called it drama. I don't even think that's right at all. But thank you so much. Be good to each other, everybody. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you want to support what I'm doing, check out any of my videos. Or, of course, you can check out our sponsor, G Fuel. I love you all. I will see you all next time. Goodbye.
Drink G Fuel. Bye.
Drink G Fuel. Drink Prime. Logan, hit me up. That G Fuel's going to be mad.